Sarah McMaster with Exploring Education. Today I'm joined with Derek Kinsey, who is our Chief Technology Officer here in Redondo Beach Unified School District. We're going to spend some time today talking about tech tips for parents during distance learning and how to keep your kids safe online. Derek, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm really excited about this conversation that we're about to record and share out with our listeners. Because of the school closure that happened in the spring of 2020 and now our continued distance learning model that our district is currently in, our kids have been spending a lot more time online. Parents have had to learn how to navigate platforms with their children, and the kids have had to do the same thing. And there are some really positive things that are going on with the increased use of technology. But however, there are some kind of like dark places as well that we're going to spend some time talking about. So I always like to start with the positive. As a technologist, do you see some unintended positive consequences that will come out of this time of distance learning?
Yeah, when March 13th hit last year, that changed the world when we shut down. We had to kind of rethink education. We started off and everyone was kind of figuring out the way, what to do. We in Redondo Beach Unified were fortunate because we did have our one-to-one program. Our student did have devices. I would say one of the positive aspects of this is we taught teachers how to digitize their curriculum more. Students really understood now how to video conference and the importance of kind of video conferencing in a business fashion. And I think we as a world learned that, we can still do our work, our business, our education online and still have meaningful content coming back and forth and do some live teaching. Is it ideal? No. We as human beings are, meant to see each other and talk to each other and that. And so there is, but it made, I would say in this COVID times, the isolation a little bit better. At least we can see each other on screen and talk to each other and really understand etiquette on video conferencing and etiquette in conferences and, etiquette that anyone can see you online when your camera's on. So I think it made it a little bit more comfortable on the digitalization, of our curriculum. Really figuring out how to give meaningful feedback back and forth between, student and teacher and student and, teacher and parents. So, I really think that's the positive aspect of it. Some people would disagree. There's some negative aspects of that, but, increasing digital literacy, understanding, how you can use technology to better assist you in your life in a more positive aspect than in a negative way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I want to speak a little bit about the digital literacy piece and then also kind of my experience as a parent. I've watched my daughter who was in the one third of the school year left to go in her first grade year, right? And then she comes home with the Chromebook and she has to engage with her teacher and classmates online. And this first grader all of a sudden was using Google Classroom. She doesn't go to Redondo, but that's the platform that her district was using last year and has continued to use for all grade levels. But anyway, the concept of watching her develop these, critical executive functioning skills much earlier than she may have had the opportunity to had this not happened, I think has been really powerful. And kids are learning how to, access text online and just navigate in a digital environment in a greater capacity than what they would have experienced previously. So I'm always like an optimist, but I think that once we come out of this and the dust settles from COVID, it definitely has changed education, and there are some, positive consequences that have arisen. So thank you.
And I'd also say with that, textbooks, we do textbook adoptions. That's every 7-10 years a school district will do, not just particularly Redondo Beach Unified, but other school districts as well. going to a digital content platform and doing a lot of our textbooks in the digital arena on a website allows us to have more real-time information. I would say even for my kids, you know, I have older kids. I have a freshman in college, and I have a senior in high school and a sophomore in high school. You know, their ability to learn, to find out information and to understand. I was helping my son fix his car the other day. Well, we Googled it. We looked for the code. We looked for what was kind of going on, and we were able to fix it ourselves. So the way to learn and to find knowledge, you know, the school doesn't, we don't stop learning from 8 to 2 o'clock anymore. We're now 24 hours a day. So that's what really is a positive aspect of it, of the ability to learn outside of the school day has been extended due to technology.
Yeah. And kids are learning how to learn online, right? So they're mm-hmm. learning, they now know where they need to go to find that information, which I think is really important. And this is a great segue for my next question for you as we start to talk about, you know, kids and learning online and Google searching and all that. There's definitely, you know, the internet is a big place, and it can lead you to very quickly sometimes. You might be searching something and it leads you to a place that you don't want to be. Right. And as adults, we know how to filter ourselves out of that. But sometimes for kids, they end up finding themselves in, you know, maybe a place that's inappropriate, or they might be curious about something and they search it and it takes them down to a place that's not safe for them. So I think that it's important today to talk a little bit about your recommendations for what you want parents to know about how to help their children stay safe online.
Sure. There's a couple of resources that I even use as a parent when my kids were, you know, in elementary school, in middle school, and even in high school, it doesn't stop, that I really utilize. The first site that I've always went to and I've always trusted was Common Sense Media, and that's at commonsensemedia.org. It's a great resource for just not technology, but all things in social media, movies, whatnot, that I really utilized for many, many years, and they've been around for a very, very long time. Another website that I always used back in the day was NetSmarts. That's NetSmarts with a Z, not an S, .org. They also work with the National Exploited for Missing Children's in conjunction with that, where they do offer a lot of stuff on how to keep kids on safe online and whatnot. And I've had my kids, when they were younger, go through all the exercises of Common Sense Media and NetSmarts to really understand what to search for, how to search for, and whatnot. Now, I'm a technologist, so my house is set up a little bit different than the common household. I actually have, professional network gear at my house, professional, things that we use in the industry for content monitoring. So I was able, being a technologist, was able to monitor my kids' iPhones, laptops, and wherever they were at on or off the network, using a product at the time called Cisco Umbrella. But there's a whole bunch of products. And Disney launched a parent content filter. Your internet service providers have basic content filtering. You can look on your home router. You can contact them. If you just want to look for content filtering, you can kind of look for that information out there. And so that's a lot what I used back in the day. Apple really stepped it up with the family share plan, where I really set up at the time when my kids had iPhones, where I could monitor what they were doing with the family share plan. I could, it's got better and better. At the beginning, it was very, very basic. Now you can get down to, they can't download apps. You can really control a lot of stuff on their iPhone. And I still utilize that with my family. My 15-year-old daughter still has to get approval for me to send something. My freshman in college, he's an adult now. He can, even though he's still on my plan, but he's still, hey dad, can you do this for me? I'm like, sure. Another resource for parents that's really, really good that is recently, in the last 3 years, they've come about 4 years, is the Center for Humane Technology. And they are the folks that's kind of behind the Social Dilemma, documentary that's now kind of around on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I've been watching their work for quite some time. So as a parent, that is an excellent resource for parents to take a look at, and especially in the apps today that that are online, like for instance, like apps like TikTok, apps that are like Snapchat, whatnot. There was a lot of controversy back and forth. My daughter wanted Snapchat when she was in eighth grade, and I was absolutely not. Now as a sophomore, she asked to have Snapchat. You know, I bent a little on that one, but her and I have a conversation about Snapchat. Am I a big proponent of Snapchat? No. As a technologist, no, but I understand that, you know, it's where how we raise our kids and we give them the tools to make the best decisions that they can. Each family has to make their own decision on that. But with those three sites, you know, Common Sense Media, NetSmarts, and the Center for Humane Technology, you can really get a grasp of what these applications are about and what it's out there. So you as a parent can make, you know, the best decision for your family on what's out there and how to stay safe online. Another couple of things I always tell parents, always check the internet history.
Yeah.
If you're seeing internet history is deleted or things are deleted, sparingly, you know, like there's a whole day gap missing, you need to have a conversation with your kids about that.
Right.
My kids, you know, their dad being a technologist, you know, couldn't get away with a lot, but they tried. Kids are kids. Was always having that conversation. Another big thing, when my kids were younger, I never allowed them to have their technology in their room at night. It was always in my home office. The school's device was the school's device. Our personal device was our personal device. Mm-hmm. One thing that I really taught my kids was the school's device is for schoolwork, just like in your professional life as we are. My professional device at work is my professional device I use for work. My personal laptop at home is for my personal use, my personal business, make videos and everything else. So I've always kept that separate boundary in my life. And I've always told my kids, this is very important, because when our kids go into the workforce, we want them to understand that companies monitor what you're doing. Your email's monitored, your social media monitored. Everything's monitored out there. And the conversations I've had with my kids and with other parents and kids is what they put on social media. Companies now are looking at your Instagram, your Facebook, they're Googling you to see what's out there. And that's important to have that conversation. That's all part of being safe online. And it didn't stop in high school. Just having my senior in high school and my freshman in college, you know, there's still that conversation of be careful what you post out there.
We have to have it amongst ourselves as professional adults.
Yeah.
So, the concept of like everything you do leaves a footprint, we need to remind ourselves of that as well.
Yeah. And, social media started, you know, Facebook started as being in contact with your friends and putting pictures, and then grandma got on Facebook and, you know, keep the family in contact. But the other side on social media, is the likes and dislikes. And I'm also worried about, you know, the image that our kids have of themselves online. That's very important to have that discussion. People are posting, what they post online, they post the positive. I can go and stand in front of a $150,000 car and say, hey, look what I got today. And it's not reality. So it's, there's a lot of fantasy online. And I had a lot of that conversation with my kids of what they're posting. They're posting something that's great and that looks great, but in all reality, you don't know the truth behind that picture. So that's a conversation I have had a lot with our kids. I have a lot of conversation a lot with our parents, but definitely to go back to those three websites, definitely spend some time as a parent and look at those. And they also have social contracts with technology, and keep that technology out of the room until you feel that your kids are appropriate enough to handle it. In my case, it was pretty much not until the mid to freshman year, kind of tail end of their freshman year in high school, that I started allowing to have my kids having their technology overnight in their room. And if they weren't responsible, I took it away.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, right? Like, we can't just give a kid a device and think that they're okay. It's like, we wouldn't just let them walk to the grocery store that's a mile away right now unsupervised and just say, okay, go pick this up for me. You know, it's the same concept. We still need to be monitoring what our kids are doing. And just like when they are, you know, our parent audience, our listening audience for this podcast is probably mostly elementary school parents, but you know, when they go to a play date,
yeah,
and they spend 3 hours at a friend's house, you say, well, what did you do? Right? Like, tell me about it. It's the same concept of if your child is in their room, you know, online or, you know, playing a video game or interacting with their friends, at, you know, on a Zoom call or house party or whatever they're using, Facebook Messenger for kids. What did you talk about, right? What did you do with your friends today? It's the same concept. You, as a parent, we need to know where our kids have been and what they've been doing. And it's the same for their online usage as well.
And a lot of questions I do get too is when should my son or daughter have a phone? Which is interesting these days because the home phone has gone away. Not a lot of people have a home phone. Now, for me personally, we were very much, you know, that was a conversation with my wife that we went back and forth on. I wanted to make sure before I gave my daughter had her phone when she was in fourth grade, my son in fifth grade, and my other son in, sixth grade and seventh grade. So, and it was really because my oldest son was going around in seventh grade, then my youngest son, sixth grade, was kind of started going around, and then my daughter was going places and I was able to get a hold of her because, you know, my wife had that parent's phone number, but I didn't have it. So I had to go through and find out, you know, what the days of just having a home phone just kind of went away. So if you're going to do that, the thing I do have common sense being all those sites have, you know, I made sure I had all those parental things in place before I gave my kids a phone. And now they're, you know, tracking on the phone, all this other kind of stuff that parents can do. And that's all a personal decision for a family. But that is the question now. And I am seeing kids younger and younger have a cell phone. So my daughter had one at fourth grade. Maybe it was a little too early, but, you know, she had such an old phone. You know, we started with a flip phone. We didn't do an iPhone. Mm-hmm. That changed probably about a couple of years later. But that's what we started with first. I started low tech, just basically this is for me to get a hold of you and not to have a social media with family. So.
Well, that's great. So, and I, you know, it's one of those things, right, that I have a second grader and she probably wants a phone now. So it's kind of funny. And you talked a little bit about some red flags, the concept of if your child's history has been, you know, cleared and you don't see where they've been for a day, then that might be a red flag. But when we think about what parents need to be watching for in terms of appropriate online activity or like websites that kids have been visiting, what are some of the red flags that you've seen that you just want parents to have a heads up about?
I would see a lot of the red flags actually come from social media sites. They're more going to sites and what they're Googling. You know, the algorithms of all these applications from Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all these applications, are out there. And, you know, you need to see what your kid is posting, what filters they're using. I see filters as a lot of red flags because it's teaching people that they're not accepting you for who you are. And it's presenting a false narrative and it's living kind of in this fantasy world. And that's not good for us as human beings. A lot of the red flags of one, like I don't allow TikTok in my house at all. TikTok has no value in our household. I've had that conversation with our kids. You know, my son doesn't have TikTok. My oldest son, he gets it. You know, that's just a very, for me, that's an app that is just dangerous. And so, you know, that's that kind of stuff, these TikTok challenges, that kind of stuff that lead young kids, that makes an impression, that's not a good idea. These bots are, you know, there's a lot of extremism on the internet and they're getting them through the app. So if you're looking up a subject that, you know, whatever's out there, whatever controversy of the day is,
right.
You know, that bot, these automatic algorithms are going to automatically start feeding you more information. And then you just start going in and going in and going in. And you know, my son, had an incident of that where he was researching a project several years ago. And the stuff that came through, I was like, you know, the bots were just sending all this weird information to him. And so I had to clear his cache, clear a lot of stuff out, so that bot wouldn't start feeding that information anymore. But it's very hard to trick these algorithms too. I mean, I've played with Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So I would say for me, for parents, the number one thing is really find out, grab your kid's phone and find out where they're going.
Yeah.
My kids always knew your phone, I can look at your phone any given time. And if there's something weird, you know, my kids, they knew, not all the time, kids aren't perfect. They make mistakes. But they knew if there's something out of the ordinary, they brought me their phone and they brought me their computer and said, "Hey, Dad, this doesn't look right, or this pop-up ad is wrong, or something's going on." And I had to really go and investigate and kind of take a look what's kind of going on. The other thing is really, you know who your friends are online. Not just the not just an iPhone or computer. You know, if your kid has an Xbox or a PlayStation, they're playing on, that's an online platform and an online community.
Yeah.
And there were times where I caught my kids talking to somebody online through their Xbox, my boys in particularly, they were talking to some adult. That's not appropriate. You know, I like video games like the next guy, but I don't need to have a conversation with somebody who is, you know, 7 years old. That's just not appropriate.
That's a red flag right there.
Yeah. That's a red flag, you know. You know, even a high school student, that's kind of a red flag. I mean, it was kind of, but I always was, you know, I made sure my kids didn't have their headsets on. I can hear the audio, what's kind of going on in the game, and whatnot. Inappropriate games, you know, very popular game back in the day was Grand Theft Auto. Not a very appropriate game to play for elementary kids and whatnot. So I would say a lot of the red flags for me is what I always looked out for was, what websites are my kids going to? How long are they on social media? Like, I only allowed 1 hour of screen time a day when my kids were growing up. If they kept on having to get their phone or get their computer or play on the Xbox, that was a problem. My wife and I, at that time, we just basically said, "Hey, look, you got to stay off it. You have 1 hour and that's it. That's 1 hour of playing on the computer, 1 hour playing on your Xbox, 1 hour of whatever. But after that, here's a book, read a book." And that's what we are really, really strong upon. And I was always supervising them. I was always seeing what they were on. So know where your kids are going. And if they're downloading apps and deleting apps, or you see just weird things, you know, make sure that you're following up and having that conversation. So those are the red flags for me.
I appreciate those red flags that you talked about. And, you know, just that whole concept of the addiction, right? Like, we have to, as parents, and sometimes even ourselves as adults. I mean, you know, I feel bad for my husband because he'll, you know, be looking at his phone, and poor guy. Sometimes I think, oh God, he's like, you know, looking at something on Instagram, right? And then really he's doing work, right? He's checking email. And that happens to us as adults a lot. So I have to say, like, "Hey, are you doing work?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm finishing up something real quick." And I'm like, okay. But because we need our phones professionally, you know, as adults, and that's a reality, but we also have to be mindful of what our kids see us do, right? So if our kids see us constantly on a screen, looking at something, then what are they going to imitate, right? So if that's the appropriate behavior in your home and it's all the time, then that might be something for us as adults to be reflective of as well. And you brought up the concept, and we do this actually in my house as well. We just say, like, no phones at the table. So, you know, the only meal that we really get to eat together is dinner. And sometimes because of schedules, we're not all eating together every night anyway. But when we do sit down and eat dinner, I mean, it's a pretty hard rule in my house, no phones at the table. So, and my daughter's seven, my kids are 7 and 4. So that's a rule for my husband and I.
Yeah.
To keep our phones, you know, put our phones down when we're at the table. And sometimes it's really hard to do because, like I said, Yeah. Waiting on an email.
Yeah, get an email from work. We have to deal with something. I mean, one thing, I really came to that realization about 10 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago. I was at a, we were at a restaurant, just like a normal restaurant with the family. All my kids were on their phone. I was on my phone. My wife was on her phone. And here we are in this restaurant sitting here having dinner and no one's talking. No one's looking at each other. Everyone's too busy on the phone. And I was just like, what are we doing? I'm even guilty of this. And, you know, and I had to make a very conscious effort. You know, now when we're having dinner, you know, it's time for us to talk, catch up, what's going on. I find out more about my kids, what's going on, just by sitting down and having dinner at a restaurant or dinner at home, because they get busy lives. And, you know, I get kids in high school now. They don't want to see mom and dad. They're off, you know. Well, in COVID times, they're seeing way too much of us, but, you know. So yeah, that's extremely important.
It was actually really funny because, you know, I was listening to Brené Brown interview. I think she was interviewing Judd Apatow. Like this was months ago on one of her podcast episodes. But anyway, he was talking about the concept of one of the benefits of the quarantine was the time together and the reconnecting time. And we, you know, the last, you know, 6 to 9 months of our lives, everyone's been with the people they live with and, you know, ad nauseum, but we have had a chance to reconnect with one another. And, you know, that half an hour that you sit down and eat dinner together might be the only time you really get to talk to each other the whole entire day. And everybody needs to talk to somebody in person.
Yeah.
So
yeah, especially in these times.
That's definitely important. Let's shift gears a little bit. And I definitely want to ask this question. You talked a little bit about games, right? And we were talking more about like video games, but we have parents sometimes who email us and they say, can you please turn the games off of my child's Chromebook, you know? And because maybe their kids are playing games that aren't educational, right? But, you know, gamification is definitely a great way for kids to learn. So what's your take on the concept of turning off the games?
Oh, this is a very tough thing. First off, in the district, we try to block most non-educational games, but there's so many games out there, so many resources out there that are classified as non-educational, but are educational games, mm-hmm. And whatnot, that it's, we try to follow a very balanced approach here in the district. If we find an inappropriate game and the teachers let us know and put in a help desk ticket and say, hey, please block this game, no problem, we'll block it, not an issue. It's hard for us to turn off all games. It's hard for us to turn off the whole internet. And that is kind of the problem. As everyone knows, we do content filter our Chromebooks when they go home. We content filter in the middle. And what I mean by that is I have very conservative families and I have very liberal families in the school district. We try to what I call uphold the Disney standards. You know, the where if your kid's watching Disney Channel, you know, that's kind of where we're trying to content filter. But at the same on the different side of that is we do also have students who are trying to bypass our filter on a regular basis. And this is where I kind of fall into the thing of our Chromebooks are for school, your personal device is your personal device, and that's kind of the life that I've always lived by. But I understand that some families just have the one device for their child. You know, we very, very much try to take off games. I understand it's a time waster, but some people are fine with the games and, oh yeah, if my kids did all their work, I trust them. They know what they're doing. It's not an issue. So with the games, you know, it's hard for us to turn off all the games, but, we do our best to content filter the games. Like I said, if parents have an issue, contact your site administrator or your teacher, let them know, and we'll be able to block those games. We do. We generally have our blocking the same day or within 24 hours.
Yeah, and I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about before of, you know, knowing where your kids are, where have they been, right? How are they spending their time? And just if they're playing a game online and they're really into it, if you sit down with them for 5 minutes and you spend time, you know, seeing them play that game or having them talk to you about what they're doing in it, you can determine as a parent whether or not it's something that really is educational or, you know, maybe is, I hate to use this word, but like junk, and you don't want your child just spending their time on that. And then as a parent, you know, we have to be parents and we have to say, not this one, you're not allowed. I mean, my 4-year-old knows about YouTube and she wants to watch YouTube all the time. And I'm like, you're not allowed to watch YouTube. And she has temper tantrums. And because you know what, we've slipped and we've let her watch some YouTube, but she ends up, I don't like the way she behaves after she's watched like a half an hour of YouTube. Right. There's something about it with her. And I have to be a parent. I have to be firm. And I have to say, you're not watching that. You're not watching that. You're not watching that.
Yeah. YouTube for children, especially young children, 4 or 3, is not a good place for them. It's like allowing them to watch. I'm going to, again, age myself. It's like watching HBO or Cinemax by themselves and watch whatever movie you want at home. You don't have parental controls on the TV. I wouldn't let my 4-year-old watch a rated R movie, you know, and that's kind of, you know, there's stuff out there in YouTube. They've cleaned up a lot of YouTube, but there's still a lot of obnoxious content on YouTube. And YouTube now, as a teenager or as an adult, there's a lot of valuable content out on YouTube. I mean, heck, I YouTubed how to fix my son's car the other day on an issue that was happening and how this guy fixed it. And that's a great place it's a great place for that. I mean, I have a couple friends, I have a couple of YouTube channels and the technology industry that I follow them, and it's a great episode. They have 15, 20 minute episodes. Podcasts like this are great resources out there. But it's just, again, sitting down with your kid, like what you and I are talking about, and seeing what they are doing and understanding that content. We as parents have to be engaged at all times with our kids online and knowing what they are, especially at a young age. And what you were kind of saying earlier, you saw a parent who were taking selfies all the time. You know, that if you're doing selfies all the time, your child's going to copy what they're doing. If you're doing this online, your child's going to copy that. So you have to be very aware. You're setting the expectation. You're setting the example of how to be a good digital citizen online.
Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, we know being a parent is hard, right? And it's a job that's never going to go away. And, you know, as our kids engage more and more with technology, it's just something else that we have to be cognizant of. And, you know, it has to be something that we focus on. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the different platforms that parents have had to become adept at with distance learning. You know, we recognize the strain and the extra responsibility that has been put on our parent community. We appreciate every effort that our parents have put forth in supporting their children during, you know, the time of COVID. But I want to spend a little bit of time having you share with our listeners a little bit of information about what our IT team has done and put together for resources for parents. So we have a wonderful distance learning tech resources site that our IT team has put together for our parents and students. Can you share a little bit about some of the highlights of that site and how parents can find it?
Sure. Our distance learning site is available on our RBUSD website. If you go to rbusd.org, then information technology, and right on the right-hand side, you will see the distance learning tech support site. That has our process of all for how to, if there's an issue with your child's Chromebook or iPad, how to contact us the proper way that we're fulfilling help desk tickets and fixing devices. One of the big things that we did put up there is troubleshooting and repairs. We got a lot of questions regarding how can you speed up your home internet access. That's been a big issue. The best way I can describe to parents is what's kind of happening with the internet. We're seeing about a 10% slowness on the internet lately worldwide because everyone's online. You may have 4 people working from home, you know, mom, dad, and 2 kids, or if you're a family of 3 or whatever your family dynamic is. And it's how do you get faster internet, or the thing I hear on Zoom calls or WebEx calls, it's glitchy. And that can be a number of things. So we did put together a home network troubleshooting guide of just quick tips and tricks that I've done in my house, that I've helped friends and whatnot and put out there, you know, like resetting your router, you know, checking your connections, moving your internet router to more of the middle of the house, because some people have them on a far corner of the house. Those make a difference, of what kind of occurs. And we also have, you know, common Chromebook problems, common iPad problems. It's a quick follow through. We have how-to videos. We tried to make it as quick as possible, easy as possible for our families to correct a problem or see what's kind of an issue or flash a Chromebook. A lot of things I do recommend to parents, our students do download extensions. We do need some of these extensions on our Chromebooks. Having the extension vault kind of open, not completely open, our students did find, games in the extension vaults for this.
Yeah.
If you're having a lot of Chromebook issues, we do have a process on there on how to delete extensions. And have a conversation with your child about those extensions. Why do you really need those extensions? That's the number one thing I always have with my kids. Why do you really need that app? What's it really doing for you? How's it helping you? If it's not really helping you and it's just cute, I generally convince my kids to get rid of it. And so that's kind of the same thing that we're telling our kids too. If we do get our what we do chat with parents, we just tell them, hey, start removing the extensions. Because they were fun at one time and, it's kind of hard, but we do need to have the extension vault open because there is a lot of extensions now, especially in distance learning, that we are unaccounted for, that we don't want students to wait on or teachers to wait on, that they can just automatically install.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that just the concept of, having that conversation with your child about the extensions that they have downloaded and, asking them, well, does this help you learn? Right? Because if it doesn't help you learn, then maybe you don't need it on your Chromebook right now. I'm sitting here looking at my phone and I'm reflecting on sometimes I download apps and then I never use them. And then every couple months, I'm like, why do I have this app on my phone? Right? And then I delete it because I'm just like, this doesn't serve me. So it's kind of like that same concept of just cleaning it up, right? I had another parent tell me that sometimes when her daughter's Chromebook is acting up or it's slow, they take a look at how many tabs her daughter has open. And the more tabs you have open, the less productivity you have. So they cycle through and close out those tabs, right? So, and we need to do that as well as adults. Like sometimes by the end of the day, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really start 30 different projects today and I have to go through and close them out. But you kind of have to teach kids to do the same thing as well.
And then also with a Chromebook, the Chromebook is a very basic device. It's mm-hmm. a very entry-level device that we're able to put in all of our kids' hands to do the basic functions of word processing, Excel spreadsheet, web browsing, research, utilize apps that are other websites. Video takes a lot of processing power. So if you have a bunch of tabs open, it's going to slow down your video and it's going to make you jittery. And so what we always tell parents, take off all, make sure that all those tabs aren't open. That's a great point that you brought up. And video conferencing, the processor of that Chromebook, is kind of at the basic level. That's the lowest end processor on the market Chromebooks have. And so they can do the video, they can do it, but it's a strain on them. It's like the hamster wheel keeping up a little bit. The more and more tabs you have open, the more and more process. That's why those extensions are so important to remove, because that's taking processing power.
Awesome. Well, we're almost coming to the end of our time together, but I just have one more question, right? So as a technologist, right, you're always probably thinking a few steps ahead and just kind of thinking about the future. So, in our district and just generally, I think in a lot of places, we entered distance learning because we had to, right? And ultimately our goal as a public school district is to serve our students in the best way possible. So Let's talk a little bit about how you see parents and teachers embracing hybrid learning and what your visions are of this from a technology perspective.
Well, when we return, we really worked with our stakeholders. We worked with, we work in conjunction with our educational services department, who's responsible for all the instruction in the school district. We're working with our site principals. We're working with our associations. We are working with PTA. That's the spokesperson group for our hybrid learning. And so I think we're standing in a really good area right now with us, with our, especially our one-to-one program of bringing devices back and forth from home to school. We've been doing that for the last 8 years, thanks to Measure Q. But we've only been doing that from the third to the 12th grade level. Mm-hmm. Now we're looking at TK through second grade of bringing those devices back and forth and really making sure that that's a good thing in the hybrid solution. you know, it's constant evolving. It's constantly evolving. We just had a board meeting recently regarding our reopening with LA Department County of Health and the Board of Supervisors, and we are taking direction from our Board of Education and our stakeholder groups. And it's very important that we all plan this together and work together on this. So right now, where I thought hybrid was going to look, you know, in at the beginning of the school year to where hybrid is now to the ever of a evolving COVID world of can we open, can we not open, can we do this, can we do that? Rest assured to all of our parents and our families out there that it's not just going to be an overnight thing of, okay, we're all back. You know, it's going to be a very thought out plan, as we have always done in RBUSD, to make sure that we have all stakeholder involvement and making sure that we all return safe, and the hybrid solution will work very, very well. And you know, it's going to be another, I don't think it's going to be that bad of a learning curve, not like it was with 100% distance learning for a little learning curve. I think it will be, it'll be a lot easier, and the, you know, we'll learn from that and we'll adapt. And I think that's the number one thing. What we learn, we adapt. You know, oh, that's, you know, we're a school district of, hey, if this isn't working well, we're not going to continue down that road. We're going to shift and make sure it works and whatnot. And we're making it work within the boundaries that were given to us. And I think that's an important thing for our families to remember. We are following what our Department of Health says. We are following what the leaders of the state say, what we can and cannot do. So.
Right. And I think that that's important. You know, we're doing the best we can with the situation that we've got. Right. And kind of circling back to the, you know, the focus of our podcast today, like technology is important, and it's definitely, you know, not going away, no matter what our educational model looks like in the future, whether we shift back to 100% in person. All the things that our teachers have learned, our parents have learned, and our students have learned about how the use of technology can, you know, increase access, right, and help them as learners, those things are not going to go away. So for me as an educator, when I think into the future, I'm pretty excited because everybody has had the opportunity to increase their capacity and think about learning differently because of, you know, the force of needing to go distance, right? So it wasn't a choice. It was, we have to do it for everyone's safety for the time being. But the concept of my daughter has now learned how to learn online. And that's pretty awesome when I think about her future and where that could take her, right? As a learner and, you know, into adulthood. And us as professionals, we've learned how to collaborate online in a way that we didn't really have to before, because we were always able to be together in person. So I think the concept of everyone's mindset shifting into thinking about all the learning that we have all done related to technology, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, as an adult, I mean, for my kids, their online learning, you know, it's now they, my son who's in college, started his freshman year in college. You know, I am kind of bummed that he's not on a campus. He's not socializing. There is that aspect of college, but you know, he can learn online, but he's also saw some great lectures from other universities that you would never really be able to see if we didn't have this happen. So that's one of the positive aspects of this, of, you know, you can see a lecture from Harvard University now, or you can see a lecture from, you know, a Texas professor in a Texas university, or whatever you're interested in, whatever that university has, you can see that, you can find that information and see those lectures now and learn a lot more. So, you know, we're all getting there. We're all learning this. We're all, you know, we're all tirelessly working to make sure it goes. There's stressful moments, just like all of us have at home and here and you know, we're all trying to make the best online experience as possible.
I agree. Well, Derek, I just wanted to say thank you for your time today. And this conversation has definitely made me think, and I hope it makes our parents think as well.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.